Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marge Regan. So how do you get to Carnegie Hall? You know the punchline. Practice, practice, practice. Well, maybe it's time to change that refrain to Berklee, Berklee, Berklee. To date, 100 Berklee College of Music alums have received close to 240 Grammy Awards. College offers an impressive curriculum of online courses. They just introduced a graduate degree program on its Boston campus. Here with us in Studio 3 to talk about the importance of a music education, how the music industry is changing, is Roger Brown. Roger's the president of Berklee College of Music. Roger, it's a pleasure to meet you.
It's good to be here. Thanks
great,
for having me.
Great to have you here, Roger Brown. So that was a wonderful, impressive introduction that Jim just gave to why Berklee's terrific.
I didn't hear it all, though. Maybe we should have it again.
But, you know, there had to be some parents out there listening to us right now who live in fear that their little drummer, like you were as a kid, are going to come home and say, senior in high school, Mom and Dad, I don't want to go to Harvard. I want to go to Berklee and be a musician. How do you convince these people that this is not a dead end? You'll be broke counting pennies for the rest of your life, Roger Brown, because you're not always going to make it big.
One of our great faculty members is Livingston Taylor.
One of our favorite guests, by the way. We love him.
He's amazing. And he has an opinion about every topic, even those he knows very little about. But I love Livingston. And he told me when I first got the job that he had been working at Harvard as a housemaster. He said, here's the difference between Harvard and Berklee. When a young person is accepted to Harvard, it's after 18 years of effort on the part of the entire extended family. When someone decides to go to Berklee, it's usually over the objections of the entire extended family, which is only partially true, but there's a seed of truth there. And part of what makes Berklee so special is our students have made a conscious decision to pursue music full tilt boogie. You know, this is what they're going after. It's a harder road than going to be an accountant or, you know, many other professions that are neatly laid out for you.
Why? Fewer jobs?
Well, no, it's a freelance world. Mm. So, you know, when you get done, there's no record label that shows up and says, we're going to hire 50 of you.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go to Brooklyn or L.A. or London or someplace and start writing songs or performing. So that makes it challenging. But I guess one of the points I make to parents all the time is this. Of the top 25 employers of Berklee grads, 7 are the biggest high-tech companies in the country. Apple, Microsoft, EMC, Cisco, IBM, et cetera. Because if you can compose great music, you can write software code. So training to be a musician does not mean you have to be a busking musician in the subway. There are actually a lot of, you know, impressive 21st century jobs that musicians can do if they choose to go that path. Also, another thing that's cool about being a musician is you could move to any city on the earth, put up a sign that says Berklee grad is teaching guitar lessons, and you'll get phone calls. So you're like a turtle. You kind of carry your profession on your back wherever you go. Now, you're not going to get rich that way, but you can get started without, you know, having to get a job with someone, you know, anywhere you go.
So being a personal entrepreneur is part of the mix for someone
absolutely.
To succeed. Yeah.
And that's part of what we're trying to focus on is how do we help not just the business entrepreneur, but the artistic entrepreneur get started, hang in there, do the work it takes to get their whatever it is, the songwriting or their performance jump started.
Who do you compete with? Who are your major competitors?
You know, there is no single competitor, but if you look at who do students go to when they don't go to us, there's no institution that gets more than 2 or 3% of them, but NYU is on that list because they have music, they have music engineering, they have music business, they sort of have the full suite of what we have. USC is on the list. Some specialized schools like Manhattan School of Music, New School. We don't really compete with the conservatories. You know, if you want to be a great symphonic player, you'd go to Curtis, Juilliard, NEC. We have a few of those who've come through our shop, but that's really not what we're designed for. So we compete with the jazz schools and those integrated universities.
You know, Roger Brown, president of Berklee, when you do surveys, which I assume you do, of grads, alum, 10 years out, 20 years out, whatever it is, what percentage of them are still in the music business in some capacity, whether a music therapist, an artist themselves, a producer, what percentage?
That's a great question. 80% are making at least half their income from music, and 55% are full-time musicians. Now, they may be performing, they may be doing some shows, they may be teaching, they may be working at a school, but they're piecing together all their income from music. And I think that's a distinguishing factor of Berklee versus a typical conservatory is we're trying to train musicians for the music industry that exists now and will exist tomorrow. We're about contemporary music, not just jazz, but rock, pop, blues, hip-hop, Latin, film scoring, TV music, video game music. So we're trying to, you know, right now, Pandora, Spotify, these companies are crawling with Berklee alumni who are creating these new music streaming companies.
You know, can we step back from this just for a second? You know, I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking of the kid who, in response to Marjorie's question, who's dying to go to Berklee and be a musician. I understand how they got there. I can't quite understand how you got there. I mean, when you read your bio,
he was a drummer in Kenya.
You're doing some project with your wife in Sudan. You were the founder and president of Bright Horizons. And in the spirit of full disclosure, Marjorie and
I, my oldest daughter, was a graduate of Bright Horizons,
which is this huge and wonderful childcare.
It is.
Empire,
it's
for lack of a better expression. So how did Berklee enter the mix for you, Roger?
Well, from the youngest age, I loved music, and I became a drummer, much to the objection of my school music leader, who wanted me to play trombone. My mother played trombone in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra.
Which is pretty unusual for a female trombonist
in Atlanta. She said she wasn't any good, but she was good enough to be in the Atlanta Symphony. And they wanted me to play trombone. I said, no, I'm going to be a drummer. And, of course, they try to talk you out of it, and I insisted. And I became in my hometown, I was the go-to blues and rock drummer. And then in college, I discovered jazz, started playing jazz and jazz fusion. And by all the standards of the other places I've worked, I've usually been the best musician. And now I come to Berklee, and I'm a humble, humble musician compared to even my students. When I first got there, I auditioned to go through the process to simulate what it would feel like to be a student. And we have an 8-point scale that places you into ensembles, 8 being the top of the line. And almost no one gets 8s. And I got a 3 out of 8.
Oh.
So listen to Marjorie.
Sorry, Roger.
I probably could have gotten in, but I wouldn't have been the top musician there, and I certainly would never have been hired to be on the faculty because our faculty are just on another planet. But I love music. I had this passion for music, and I think growing up in Georgia in the middle of the Civil Rights Movement, and you think back, my schools were segregated until the 7th grade.
Wow.
And my students can't believe that because they think that happened in 1866
exactly,
or something. I don't think you have the Civil Rights Movement without music. And the music that turned me on and opened my mind was James Brown, Sly and the Family Stone, Allman Brothers, interracial bands like Allman Brothers and the Doobie Brothers. And I just heard this music, and I heard the message of the music, and I said, wow, there's something wrong here. I remember listening to Southern Man by Neil Young and thinking, he's right. He is so right. I mean, all my friends were saying, who's this Canadian telling us how we should be? And I'm thinking, well, the truth is the truth, you know? So I think music played a really important role in opening my own eyes to what was going on in the world, and I think it still does that.
We're talking to Roger Brown. He's the president of Berklee College of Music.
So how did you make the transition? And Jim mentioned before you and your wife worked in the Sudan, did a lot of great humanitarian work all around the world. But how did you go from starting Bright Horizons, which is now 45 countries it's in and hundreds of places? I mean, it's all over the place.
Not 45
countries. 45 states, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And many states.
In Europe, India, all that kind of thing. Yeah. How did you go from Bright Horizons to Berklee? I mean, how did you make that
switch? I have a few passions. Yeah. One is education. My first job out of college was teaching math and physics in a small school in rural Kenya. And I've always felt like education is the way to change the world. So the theme of Bright Horizons, Berklee, my teaching in Kenya is all how do you – educate young people and give them a better chance in the world. Another theme and passion is maybe growing up in a chicken farming town of 10,000 in rural Georgia, you either want to stay there for life or you want to get the heck out.
Yeah.
And I was in the latter category. So I love other cultures, and Berklee has kids from 101 different countries. I like entrepreneurship. I like starting things. I like imagining things that don't exist. And Berklee itself is a very entrepreneurial organization. So I have these interests. And, you know, I say to students all the time, I think I'm a good role model for our students because as a musician, you're not going to have an easy path laid out for you. You do what you love. You do it well. And that leads you to the next thing you do. And the path may look nonlinear. But I think in my case, it's all stuff I cared about, poured my heart into, and it, one thing led to the next.
You know, there was something very interesting I read about what you're doing with the online education at Berklee, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm. is a little bit different. Tell people about that.
Well, you know, one of the big problems in higher education is it's just way too expensive for most people, especially people even outside the, you know, we talk about it within the U.S., but what if you live in Rwanda and you want to be a great musician? You can't, it's hard to move to Boston and afford an American private college tuition. So you think, how do you let this information be shared at less expense? And online education is one way to do that. And there are actually some things that are probably easier to teach online, like things like music technology, than they are in the classroom. So we're pioneering and experimenting with how you do that. So we have an online school that now serves over 10,000 students, many of them some of the top musicians in the world. The guy who co-wrote some of Adele's greatest hits studies online with us. The bass player for the Dave Matthews Band, Stefan Lessard, studies online with us. So we can reach people who are in jobs and professions. They're not going to leave and move to Boston. We can do it at less expense because we don't have to have physical facilities in the Back Bay, which is a very expensive thing.
What is it, 60% discount from what I wrote? Is that what it is roughly?
It's 60% less than the on-campus tuition.
What is the on-campus tuition?
$37,000. Mm-hmm. So you don't get the same thing. You don't get the practice rooms, the counseling services. You don't get the concentration of people. But my vision is that ultimately it's not either or. Like, imagine you're a high school senior, you're bored out of your mind, you're a great musician. What if you could do your first year of Berklee online while you're still in high school and show up and only need to go for 2.5 or 3 years?
Yeah, but aren't you, Roger, one of the things about, I mean, online education makes a lot of sense for, as you say, for financial reasons. And if it turns out you're the bass player for Dave Matthews, then the reality is you're in the music business to begin with. I worry, and I'm sure you do too, about, does it create two classes of education? Mm-hmm. And the piece of it that I think about here, how many students at Berklee?
4,400.
Okay, so there are 4,400. It seems to me one of the great thrills and inspirations for a young musician in waiting or a musician is to be amidst those 44. Yeah. With the exception of people who, one, couldn't afford it, two, are so far away geographically they couldn't get here, and three, they're in the music business already, again, like as you mentioned a minute ago, Adele's songwriter and the Dave Matthews person. Don't you worry that because it costs, people do it, and they don't come out with nearly the product that they would have had they come to Boston?
I worry about it, but I worry more about the young person who scrapes all their nickels and dimes together, comes to Boston, makes it through 3 semesters, drops out, has $40,000 of debt, no degree, and they got 3 semesters of Berklee. But what if they had done Berklee online for the first 4 semesters and then come and gotten a bigger scholarship and been able to graduate and get those 4 semesters on campus?
So do you urge people, do you say to people who are doing the online thing, we hope you're going to do this as a compliment to actually being here if you can be? Is that part of the marketing?
Well, we say to them, look, it's up to you to create your education. We have an online option. We have an on-campus option. We have relationships with 19 international schools from Tel Aviv to Athens, Greece, to Seoul, South Korea. You can study there. We have 6 community college articulation agreements in the U.S. and Canada, so you can study at Miami-Dade for 2 years and then come to Berklee. And yes, especially the kids who can't afford it, you know, we get a lot of dreamers. They've been told by Walt Disney since they're kids, if you just imagine it, it will be true. And there's, you know, you need a little bit of that to be a musician, but it'd be better to have that dreaming without $60,000 of debt. And you'll be in a better position to make your way if you're not worried about debt. So we tell them, look, if you can't afford us now, go to a community college and then come later. We'll hold a space for you. We let people defer up to 3 years without having to be readmitted. We articulate credits from those schools. We also have credit by exam. So if you show us you can do the harmony and ear training, you don't need to take it, and it counts as credit. You don't have to take other credit. So we're all about trying to make it more affordable and give people as much of that rich experience as we can. But we know that, you know, there are just a lot of people in the world who want what we have. We already have this class system in education. So we're trying to do things to just make Berklee more accessible to the middle-class kid or the poor kid who just isn't going to be able to get through otherwise.
We're talking with Roger Brown, the president of Berklee College of Music. One last thing from me, Roger. You know, every time there's budget cuts in the public school system, music is one of the first things to go. You are surrounded by musicians all the time. What's your take on the impact of learning music, learning to read music, learning to memorize music, and the young people you see at Berklee, how that changes them, their mind, their outlook, the whole thing?
You know, when you look at what parents who have the means choose to do in educating their children, they almost always insist that their children learn some music. And when you look at what affluent schools that have the resources do, they always have rich music programs. Why? Because we intuitively know that it makes you a better thinker. It helps you with memorization. It helps you with creativity and composition. The discipline of learning an instrument is something you can use no matter what you do. When you're trying to learn a new piece of software, the same tools you use to learn an instrument can help you in that. So I think we all intuitively know that's important. The good news is I think some of those school music programs are coming back. We're doing an interesting project in New York City now called Amp Up New York City, where we're training 600 New York City public school teachers in modern band methods, giving them guitars, basses, keyboards, and drum sets, and they're turning their kids loose to play Adele as opposed to John Philip Sousa. I love Sousa. I played maybe a little too much Sousa when I was in school band, but, you know, our theory is let's let kids play the music they're passionate about, and then they'll discover all the rest of the musical world as they kind of work their way back through music history.
You know, a couple more things for me, Roger Brown. You have this new your first graduate program, right? Why is that as significant as some of my friends in the music business are telling me it is? Why is that such a big deal?
Well, when I first got to Berkeley, I did a survey, and I found out that 10% of our undergraduates already have a bachelor's degree. They tend to be some of those Livingston students whose parents said, okay, if you finish at Columbia, I'll let you go to Berkeley. So
really?
We have kids from the most prestigious schools on the planet who then come to Berkeley, and they don't really want another bachelor's degree. What they really would want is a master's degree, but we never had one to offer. So these are small, elite, customized programs for those people who might have gone to a more traditional music school and want to round that out with a little bit of Berkeley. Or, you know, we have a young man who got a math degree from Columbia at Berkeley now, and he's just a passionate musician, and that's what he really wants to do. So I think the master's programs, again, it gives people more what they want. Because Berkeley has been so unique, sometimes people seek us out even if we're not exactly offering the degree they need.
So, Rod, how good are your alums? I mean, you have some of your alums are people who are just at the top of their field. John Mayer is one of my favorite musicians, even though I hear he's not the most wonderful person. You may know otherwise.
You know, I'll dispute that. John says some unfortunate things in public, but he has come back several times and done clinics for our students.
That's what I want to know. Is that the norm?
That guy, not only did he spend a whole week with 12 songwriters, he recorded their songs and played on them without asking for anything.
That's pretty great.
He gave them a digital recorder so that, you know, for a songwriter, whenever you get an idea, you don't want to lose it. And, you know, that's the story about him. It's unfortunate in a way. He's got a little bit of that kind of bad boy rock star thing going. Maybe that's even conscious. I don't know. But what I've seen from John is he's a very caring guy who really took good care of these students.
Who else is good to you of the people who have some prominence?
A guy named Juan Luis Guerra, the biggest Dominican bachata merengue star. He's a huge star in Latin America. He's incredibly generous to us. Branford Marsalis is great to us. Kevin Eubanks, Passion Pit. Those guys are
really?
All but one are Berkeley alums. Imagine Dragons, three of them are Berkeley people.
My younger daughter Esperanza would be drooling if she's listening to this interview,
yeah,
I should say.
I'm sure you and your audience don't really know these people, but American authors, Lucius, Betty Who, Kaiza, we've got more really, really young alums tearing it up out there than we've ever had. And almost every single one of them has a producer or a manager or a band of other Berkeley people. So one of the things that's cool is when Esperanza Spalding becomes really successful, she brings along with her this comet tail of opportunity for other people, the players, the producers, the arrangers, the business people. And in Kaisa's case, in Betty Who's case, and Carmen's case, the whole strategy that allowed them to become really famous was laid out for them by a classmate who was studying music business.
You know, before you leave, Roger, we said to you that we mentioned on the air at the beginning of this, don't want people to think there's something deeper than this, that we're both alums of Bright Horizons. And the story we told you, Marjorie calls me, I don't know, 15 years ago, when her kids are young and my kids are young, and I was gone out of my mind taking care of them, one particularly to two young daughters, and she says, have I found the place for you? Hmm. And you had this thing is it the basement? Can I call it the basement?
Yeah. Star
of the Star Market on Comm Ave, where it turns into Brighton Ave, whatever it is, where you could deposit your children for the most spectacular childcare with great workers. And as Marjorie said this morning to you, a normal half-hour shop became a three-hour shop because of the – it was brilliant and wonderful.
Well, you
and
dump the kids. I mean, what is the biggest hassle in the world when your kids are little, taking them shopping? I want the candy. I want this. I want that. I want that. They're climbing out of the carriage. I mean, it's like a nightmare. And to be able to go when your kids are little and you can't get away from them, plop them somewhere and go shopping and cruise slowly down the aisle.
So my point was that not only have a lot of your alums brought joy into our lives, the child care center beneath Star Market. At Broad Grange. I'm sorry I interrupted. You were going to say?
Well, I was going to say two things. One, when I first started at Berkeley, I met all these former Bright Horizon students who had now arrived at Berkeley.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And I said to their parents, you thought you had stopped paying me tuition 13 years ago.
That's right.
So I was a little – and I said, someday I'm going to have assisted living for you. That'll be my next career.
Was your first one at Kendall Square?
Yeah. That was the very first one.
That's
my the one all three of my children went to.
Yep, mine too.
And they've all turned out pretty good.
That's right. I owe it all to you, Roger Brown, your lovely wife, Linda Mason.
And you had a second point you wanted to make?
Well, the other point was in that Star Market program, one of the cool ideas that one of our teachers came up with was to create sort of like a shop. You know how kids love to pull cereal boxes off? So we created the shopping experience so they could do that under careful supervision of trained early childhood educators.
No one was better at pulling cereal boxes off the shelf than my younger daughter. Roger Brown, it's great to see you. Good luck at Berkeley.
I love your
show.
I appreciate what you all are doing.
Oh,
for Boston.
Thank you so much, Roger.
And thank you very much for coming in. Roger Brown, if you haven't guessed, he is the president of Berklee College of Music. Great to talk to you, Roger.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Up next, a Celtic Sojourn's Brian O'Donovan joins us for a preview of Boston Arts Summer Weekend, which is this weekend. You're going to hear all about it on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.